I'm in Norwell Road in Clacton-on-Sea in Essex, just off the seafront, and I'm at Edensaw, a white-painted, turn-of-the-century residential home. By the front door there's a plaque. It says, Ivan Blatný, famous Czechoslovakian poet, born Brno, the 21st of the 12th, 1919, resided at Edensaw from the 28th of October, 1985, to the 5th of August, 1990.
My name is Nurse Ring. I'm a nurse of the Edensaw, and I was here when Ivan was here. He was a little man and he loved to write his poems, although at the time he was writing them in Czech, but nobody knew what he was writing about.
And what do you remember about him as an old man?
Very quiet, very frightened.
In what way was he frightened?
Of noises. It was as though he was looking around his back all the time, you know, too frightened that somebody's going to come and get him sort of thing, you know. Because he would often tell us about things when he was back home.
Yes, I was living here the same time as Ivan Blatný, yes. And I got to know him because I used to have to keep going to the shop to get exercise books for him to write his poetry down. What was his language?
Czech.
Czech. Like he wouldn't understand our language, would he?
Ukrajina se chvíla v mokré kápi. Seděl si u stolu, vychladlý, prázdný, sám. Nad černí deštníku.
While rain went rippling out across the land, you shivered at a table, blank and alone. The downpour drummed on all that black, outspanned by umbrellas. The hours edged on. Far from people, far from their strange ways, their tedious good cheer and useless prattle, the wind waltzed, scattering hailstones and staves above the city, and all the windows rattled.
A rozházel si noty, démanty velkých krůb, a Řím si řinčeli.
There is no doubt that Ivan Blatný is one of the biggest poets in Czech history, at least in 20th century. His melancholy, I mean, this is one of the basis of poetry generally, and he was the best in this way.
The novelist and poet Martin Reiner is one of a long list of Czech writers who are huge admirers of the poet Ivan Blatný. Blatný's life story is extraordinary. It took him from celebrity when scarcely out of his teens as the greatest poetic hope of his generation to exile in London. Then there were years in various asylums and hospitals, watched from a distance by the Czechoslovak Foreign Intelligence, who codenamed him Newt. And finally, there came a second literary blossoming in a psychiatric hospital in Ipswich before he lived out his final years in Clacton at Edensaw.
Outside and in. A group of factory buildings may be called a plant. God the linguist teaches us to breathe. In a hollow of a tree, there is a cart. There lives the woodcock. There is the crown. There is the flamboyant Madame Lupescu.
In order to understand Ivan Blatný, both as a person and as a poet, we need to come here to Brno, to his hometown where he was born and where he grew up. And I'm here on the main square, that's Náměstí Svobody, Freedom Square, and I'm with Martin Tharp, Blatný scholar and translator. Now Martin, at the time when Ivan Blatný was a young man growing up in Brno, it was a provincial city, but it was by no means a backwater, was it?
No, definitely not. It was a major industrial centre, for one thing, and it had a very clear identity of its own, very clear cultural identity, very clear sense of itself as a modern city in modern Czechoslovakia.
And to put it on the map, Brno is actually very near to Vienna. It's only about an hour's drive north of Vienna, isn't it? And in this context, I mean, Ivan Blatný was born into a really very well-situated Brno family, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. The Blatný family and their relatives were definitely very prominent in Brno cultural life. His father was a writer, wrote a number of plays, died quite young of tuberculosis, unfortunately. Other members of the family, there was another relative who studied composition with Leos Janáček and was the organist in the Brno Cathedral, for example.
So let's just go just a little way out of the centre of the town to have a look at the house where Ivan Blatný was born and where he grew up.
Well, it stands on the square called Obilný trh, which means grain market. And the house at number 4 is a four-storey, 19th century building. It was nationalised when he left for immigration and was turned into a health clinic. It still is occupied by doctors and, I believe, dentists at the top floor.
So here we are, we come into the building and it's still got its original stucco, rather smart, marble stairs.
It's also the original balustrade, cast iron, but as you can see, most of the doors are cheap plywood from the 60s.
And it looks rather institutional, which is somewhat ironic given Blatný's own later fate.
Perfectly. I mean, to have the home become a hospital and the hospital a home, that sort of paradox runs through his entire work.
Ivan Blatný was an only child. The household was sophisticated and more than a touch bohemian. But Ivan was just 10 when his father Lev, the expressionist poet and playwright, died, still in his mid-30s, only to be followed by his mother 3 years later in 1933. Ivan, a highly sensitive boy, was sent to his maternal grandmother, Anna Klichnikova, who also lived here in Brno. Even at this early age, he was writing poetry, published in the student periodical Studentský časopis. And one of the great Czech poets of the first half of the 20th century, Vítězslav Nezval, noticed his poetry and took him under his wing, a key moment for the young Blatný, according to the Brno poet and writer Martin Reiner.
Ivan Blatný wanted to be a poet. And in this way, of course, Vítězslav Nezval was the best solution for him. But Blatný's grandma hated this style of life because you need to imagine the Blatný was only 16, maybe even younger. He was about 15 and he started this kind of life with cigarettes, with wine. And of course, for Vítězslav Nezval, it was like he loved him, but his influence was kind of bad influence. If you take it, Ivan Blatný was a child, actually.
When he was still only 15, Blatný inherited his maternal grandfather's opticians here on Česká Street, a shop that's still open to this day. It gave him a source of income, and during the wartime occupation, it meant that he was spared being sent as forced labour to Germany. But Blatný was not a born optician. He was more interested in the cafe across the road at the very modern and chic Hotel Avion.
There's a nice story how they always took a place by this wide window and they had a very good look across the street right to the door of the opticians. And always when some new customer entered the shop, he called waiter and asked a new bottle of wine, because they brought him money. It was very nice, of course.
His younger cousins, Pavel Blatný and Jan Šmarda, were both in awe of their sophisticated relative.
As a young man, he was truly, to say it with one word, handsome. Very elegant and always well-kept. He was so truly beloved by many girls and many young women. Not only single women, I must say, as far as I know.
It was, we can say, an angel, beautiful man, yes, such Jean Marais from Brno. Such Jean Marais. he was full of girls around him.
But Ivan Blatný was ill-equipped for day-to-day life, and even at this early age there were signs of the mental illness that would later have such a dramatic impact on his fate.
When Ivan was visiting our family, he was speaking slowly and was really out, we can say, out. We said to us, what is with him? He was afraid to cross the road on the street. It was the beginning of his problems later.
Ivan Blatny's first two collections, Pani Yitrenka, Lady Morning Star, and Melancholitske Prochaski, Melancholy Walks, were published when Brno was already under German occupation, in 1940 and 1941. His poetry was not overtly political, and was tolerated by the occupiers. Although they censored the original title of the Melancholy Walks, which had been Brno Elegies, suspecting it of being a reference to better times past. This collection in particular brought him instant celebrity.
I've come with Martin Reiner up to one of the most historic parts of Brno, just up the steps in the old town by the cathedral. And this is a place that was very significant for Ivan Blatny and that turns up in his poetry.
There's a wonderful surrounding of this church, and there's one particular poem in this Melancholic Walks, which I really love the most, probably, about this place. Poslední paprsek na starých domských schodech opouštěl klikatě utichlý zelený trh. Na malém nádvoří, schouleném pod Petrovem, rozlouskl podvečer potichu slupku ech. And it's such a wonderful verse, this one. I like it so much. There's everything. There's this essence of the melancholy.
And can you roughly translate it for us?
It's not that easy, but the last beam of sun across the old cathedral stairs, leaving a silent vegetable market. Yeah?
And then it continues here on the little courtyard, huddled beneath Petrov. The twilight cracked open, a bit like a nut, silently in the peelings of echoes. And the language itself has got a very beautiful rhythm to it, hasn't it, in these Alexandrians.
You know, it's poetry, but it's understandable for simple people. There is nothing, it's not easy to translate it, actually, but it's not exclusive language. You know, you can understand it. And definitely this feeling of echoes, it's something. I really love it.
In 1942, under the influence of the literary theorist Jindřich Chalupecký, Blatný's poetry changed dramatically as he became part of the celebrated Skupina 42, or Group 42, of Czech writers and artists.
This evening, I observed the grains and threads, propped the knife, listened to the trams. I'd be glad to speak, as I say this evening, barking. Again, rising upward, this giant book of mine I'm leafing through.
They wanted to be very civilian. I mean, very normal, not poetic. They wanted to de-poetize the poetry.
They wanted to bring in elements of the everyday. They deliberately forced in elements of everyday life, didn't they?
Exactly, exactly. And the other part of the style was they loved cities.
What a person sees in one moment. All the days, all the nights, right at that moment, gurglings from the drainpipes. Music. Listen.
Blatny's next collection, Tento večer, This Evening, published by this time after the liberation from the Nazis in 1945, was fully in the spirit of the Group 42. Blatny also enthusiastically joined the Communist Party. In 1947, Blatny published a further collection, with the Proustian title Hledání přítomného času, In Search of Present Time, and he also published a very successful edition of children's verse. He was seen very much as a poet of the increasingly powerful communist establishment. To this day, the reasons for his sudden emigration are less than clear.
When in 1947 his friend František Halas, the big Czech poet, returned from the Soviet Union, he was really intimidated what he saw there. And they talked about it. And I think it was one of the main reasons why Ivan Blatný left the country, because he knew more than many others knew.
Many years later, Blatný said that he had been afraid of losing the freedom to write as he wanted. But he also hinted that the decision to leave had been very impulsive. These are the facts as we know them. On the 25th of February 1948, the Communist Party staged a bloodless political coup, beginning the bleak years of Stalinist rule in Czechoslovakia. By coincidence, just a month later, Ivan Blatný was due to join a Czech literary delegation to London on the invitation of the British Council. On the very first day, and to general amazement, Ivan Blatný announced that he was not going back. Martin Tharp picks up the story.
He stated that he was forced to this decision by what he called the cold terror that the communists had brought to his homeland. And he also said that he was leaving the Communist Party because of what he termed its base doctrines. And this was met with a response of more than virulent anger from the party authorities and indeed all of the cultural public in Czechoslovakia.
And even some of his friends back home turned against him, didn't they?
Well, most of the writers in Czechoslovakia at that time signed petitions denouncing him, including most of his friends from Group 42. One former friend of his, the poet Josef Kainar, wrote for the newspapers a poem entitled From the Brno Radio, in which he speaks of the young genius packing his suitcases, packing his candy, his cologne, the cream for his hands. Farewell, Czechoslovakia, you old pair of boots. Instead, the genius goes to England. He offers his services to the BBC and states outright all that he believes, what he is, what he says, and how he spits on it all.
The pressure on Blatný, who had never really learned to take care of himself, was enormous. Almost as soon as he arrived, his mental health began to crack. At every step, he was convinced he was being followed. As Madame Ládková, who later published some of his verse, remembers, his fate was by no means unique.
Many of these people who escaped became sick. I remember in Washington was also a very famous professor who came from, I think his professor in the university, he escaped and he was also in asylum immediately. It must have been terrible.
Blatný was admitted to Fryon Barnett Hospital in North London.
I was going probably every week to visit him. And it was for me always a very sad experience. He didn't want to go out, but he couldn't be happy there, of course. You see, it was a terrible. He was afraid, I think, to go out.
What do you think he was afraid of?
Of the world which he didn't know. I think he didn't speak the language, of course. He was probably alone, he was unable to. You see, there was always a problem with these young men. They wanted to have girls, but they were unable to communicate with them.
And you didn't succeed either in persuading him that the asylum wasn't the place for him to be.
I did persuade him. But then, you see, I remember Christmas. Suddenly, in the evening he arrived, telling me how he loves me. He kneeled in front of me and I didn't know what to do with him. I never saw him since.
On his discharge from hospital in 1951, Ivan Blatný ended up living here, at number 14 Elms Avenue, in the leafy North London suburb of Muswell Hill. The house belonged to the Czech exile politician Blažej Vilím, and he rented out rooms to other Czechs who had fled to Britain. Two of Ivan's housemates at the time were Silva Šimcová and her husband Karel Janovický.
Blatný was a very strange person, and we put it down to him being a poet. He lived a sort of surrealist existence. He was a thin, lanky, very shabby figure, always walking around just in slippers and in a dressing gown.
And he got into trouble on one occasion from bringing back a very young girl to the house, didn't he?
There was the travelling circus down in the Alexandra Palace Park, which came round once or twice a year, and apparently he picked up the girl there. Mrs. Vilím, the landlady, got a shock after two or three days, having realised that she'd been kept in the poet's garret all that time.
And so for you as housemates, you were probably very relieved when Ivan Blatný left.
No, we were very sorry. because in spite of finding it a little bit tiresome living in the house with him, we had great sympathy for him. So I was very sad that he left, particularly I was sad about the circumstances under which he left.
Ivan Blatny was arrested. Apparently he'd tried to accost some Dutch tourists in Alexandra Palace Park, thinking that they were prostitutes. He was admitted to Claybury Psychiatric Hospital in Essex, and the next few years of his life are scarcely documented. He was all but forgotten by most of his fellow émigrés, who were still struggling to build their own lives in England. But the regime back in Czechoslovakia could neither forgive nor forget.
He was the great white hope of Czech post-war poetry for the communists and for the young, very active communists. And then to abscond, to defect, must have hit them very hard. And it came as no surprise to me that they tried hard to either get him back or somehow avenge themselves.
In 1958, the Czechoslovak Foreign Intelligence Service had the idea of persuading Ivan Blatný to come back voluntarily to Czechoslovakia, and they organized a whole covert operation. All this is perfectly documented in the archives of the former Foreign Intelligence Service in Prague, where I've come now with Martin Tharp, and we now have in front of us the documents on the computer screen where they've been scanned, relevant to this particular case. It's fascinating stuff, isn't it, Martin?
Exactly, it is fascinating. It's about 15 pages of typescript. Here's actually one of them. It says here, "This situation is highly favourable to his acquisition for a return to Czechoslovakia, to active propagandistic use, and to clarification of the actual situation within the émigré community to the Czechoslovak public."
And the bizarre thing here is that they gave Blatný a code name, didn't they, as well? He was called a Mlok, which in English means newt.
Exactly. It was a favourite practice of the secret services. I have to say that newt is probably one of the most inventive that I've come across.
And they actually sent somebody out, didn't they, to Britain, this agent Kolařík. It's probably, we've been told, not his real name. And he actually went to see him.
It says that it will be performed by means of civilian collaborator Kolařík, who will in the near future leave for England.
He didn't have a great deal of success, though, did he, as we can see in the later documents?
No, the original idea was that he would make his way to the psychiatric institution and that it would be a friendly dialogue then, after what they call basic typologizing. That's a word I didn't make up. It says, "The chief task of Kolařík will be to influence Newt so as to make him willing to return."
But of course, in reality, when he goes to see him, it's not so easy, is it?
"He spoke to him briefly, but," and to quote from Kolařík's report, "in his 9-year stay in the institution, Newt has been completely accustomed to such a form of life, has entirely lost contact with the outside world, and presently has no knowledge of contemporary political or cultural events. In the Institute, he feels altogether satisfied. He answered primarily in the sense that he missed nothing, that he went to the kitchen to peel potatoes, worked in the garden, cleaned up rubbish, washed dishes, etc. For life outside the institution, he displayed hardly any interest." According to the statement by Kolařík, Newt is in fact insane.
With the gradual political thaw of the 1960s, Ivan Blatný's cousin, Jan Šmarda, decided to find him, getting a visa to Britain on the pretense of taking part in a conference. He knew nothing of Ivan's fate and had only an address to go by, 158 Foxhall Road, Ipswich. On a rainy February day in 1968, he rang the bell at a rather forbidding Victorian institutional building.
"I expressed my wish to speak with Mr. Ivan Blatný. They didn't understand the Czech expression Ivan, because they expressed Ivan as Ivan. Of course, immediately they knew Ivan Blatný and called him from the first floor. We recognized each other immediately, so an unending stream of questions and answers followed. One of my first questions was, And what are you doing now, Ivan? What are you writing? What sort of poetry, etc.? It was a very important question, surely not only for me. And I will never forget his answer. His answer was more or less unhappy, with such a strange shade of smile. I don't write anything, which made me more or less unhappy. And I used this situation to try to persuade for him to continue writing.
And you did manage to persuade him to write again.
I repeatedly returned to this theme, and I persuaded him. And of course, I put myself a question whether I was successful or not, because I couldn't have any proof that I was successful. But the proof was that the first letters starting to arrive per post.
We have some of the letters here that he wrote.
Containing, that's it.
And there's a poem here just on I can see. Nadia Vazhino, Hopes in October. And there are other poems here. Yitro Vzarzi, Morning in September. And it must have been very exciting for you when you realized that he'd started writing again.
It was truly exciting, yes. It was one of the greatest adventures in my life at all. Maybe the greatest adventure in my life at all.
September morning. Eggshells, apple skins, fading chrysanthemums. High over the earth, a plane crawls and hums. The dog dreams in his kennel, and summer is old. Pears and grapes lie fragrant in their bowl. Garden hose in the grass, coltsfoot in the plot. A light wind, stems blown lax and taut. Secateurs, bluebells, footsteps, the earth. Many years yet for my still steady breath.
In 1977, Ivan Blatny was moved to the building where I'm standing now. It's St. Clement's Hospital, also in Ipswich, and here he was to spend the best part of the next decade. It's a large 19th century building in wooded grounds with a golf course next door. Gordon Morris was the charge nurse, in charge of the ward that became Ivan Blatny's home.
Well, he lived on the top floor of this three-storey building. He lived on Bixley Ward, which I was in charge, and Bixley Ward was a ward purely for men, and Ivan certainly, whilst he slept on the ward and ate on the ward, spent a great deal of time walking around the large grounds that we have, or in and out of the town itself. And I think that during that time, it was the time when he did an awful lot of the composing of his poetry. He would always have paper with him and would stop as he walked to make notes and then write things down better when he got back to the ward. It was something that absorbed him all of the time.
I'm Andy Wilcox. I was a Staten Road nurse and I worked on Bixley Ward until it closed December 2000. I used to do nights, and sometimes even about, say, like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, I used to look up the ward and see bright lights coming out of the toilet area, and they go up there and there's Mr. Blatny in the toilet writing some of his poems on the toilet roll. And then he said, look what I've done.
St. Clement's Hospital, golfové hřiště. Je 4. srpna.
In August 1978, Jan Šmarda and his wife Helena managed again to travel to Britain. They recorded Ivan reading some of his poetry in the grounds of St. Clement's.
Cigareta. Když člověk zapálí po práci cigaretu, úlevný lehký smích se vkrádá do údu. Úlevný lehký smích. A kurák dává světu přiznání dobrých chvil, dobrého osudu.
When a man lights up after his work is done, a grinning lightness steals through every limb. A grinning lightness, and it's all the one. He grants that life is sometimes good to him. Oh, trains and telegraph lines all abuzz, send me back there where Hallas smoking stood. Send my best to Kunstadt, to Brezina's, and Annaberg within its neighbourhood. Blue smoke I blew out, and blue smoke now floats to your Pisaki. I think I'm in the woods. A Brno tram takes me again back there. We're going through the trees. We're swinging round the expo and beyond the football ground to the cemetery, and girls wave in the air.
How important do you think his writing was to him?
Sometimes you'd say he'd sitting down, watching television, then all of a sudden he'd get up and he'd go to the table with his little pad and start writing again, put his pen down, go back, watch television, see his eyes light up, and off he goes again and writes another couple of lines. This is what he would do. Sometimes if he was doing it, he'd be quite happy to let his tea get cold.
And some of the poems that he wrote in St. Clement's, they have this fascinating quality that they go from describing Brno at the time of his youth in the 1930s and 40s, and then in the next line, there'll be references to Wimbledon or to football or to Jan Leeming or to Angela Rippon or whoever's reading the news tonight, and then there'll be a quote in German.
He often used to show me poems that he'd done, and the first verse would be in English. Then you'd get to the French, the Czech, the German, then another one in English.
Part of that, I think, you see, was that one of the characteristics of a number of mental illnesses is what we call the association of ideas, the sort of free flow of thoughts jumping from one subject to another as it occurs to us. And this happens to us all, you know, in routine thinking from time to time. We'll suddenly think of something and go off at a tangent. And I think what was happening with Ivan was that he had difficulty in controlling that flow, but was able to take large parts of it and be creative with it.
Well, what we have, it's a mixture of exercise books. There is a group of free sheets, which are in fact from the National Health Service General Practitioner Reports, with poems written across the two columns. All of them are completely filled with writing.
And there are these bizarre references, aren't there, to elements of his daily life?
Yes, there are the names of hospital staff, but also what is particularly interesting is that so many references from contemporary British pop and media culture come into it, because he, as is well known, he had the television on continually when he was writing, and so you have references like, here's one right here. Why do I love Les Dawson? Also because of his name. You see, Les is a word in my native language. Or shall I say mother tongue? Perhaps not, because I then start to think of my own mother, and hidden incest thoughts are highly uncomfortable and unhappy.
I can remember he would come up and ask me for some extra money, because he would say, oh, Mr. Morris, I must have some money so that I can go to town and buy myself a woman. And so, therefore, from time to time, we would give him some money, and then we would turn a blind eye whilst he went off to town and had a good time.
So probably I get another version of Ivan Blatny if I were to go to the Red Light District and ask some of the people who've been there a good few years. They probably remember something about him as well.
I dare say they would. Yes, they've probably got some of his poetry as well. That was often his main currency, was to write poetry in exchange for all sorts of things, sex as well as cigarettes.
Nearly all of Ivan Blatny's poetry from these years would have been lost, were it not for Frances Meacham, a nurse in her 50s who also happened to be from Ipswich. Around the time that Ivan Blatny was admitted to St. Clement's, she was in Brno, visiting an old wartime Czech friend who taught English. During the visit, she found out about Ivan quite by chance and decided to see Jan and Helena Schmarda before going back to Suffolk. The result was that Frances started visiting Ivan in the hospital. A few years before she died, she recorded her memories.
I said to him about the second visit, I understand that you write poetry. I said, oh, yes. So I said, well, what do you do with it? So he said, well, I just write it and throw it away. So I said, well, look, don't do that. I will bring you in paper and pens each week, and you save me what you have, and I will take it away and I will keep it. And we decided that would be a good idea. So every week I went, and I used to take away that he'd written and give him fresh paper.
Frances contacted the novelist Jozef Skvoretsky in Canada. One of the leading Czech writers of today, Skvoretsky's publishing house, 68 Publishers, had already brought out many editions of Czech exile literature.
She sent me a big box full of poems, handwritten poems on scraps of paper. And I had a good friend who was a poet, Antonín Brousek. So I sent him this whole treasure, and he picked up the poems he liked best, and that's what became this book. That is the first book by Blatný published after his exile. And then Miss Mitchum wrote to me that he showed it to the doctors in the hospital. And of course they knew that he was writing poetry, but every insane person writes poetry, you know. So they didn't think that he would be a poet, a real poet. And when they saw this book, which looked very nice, you know, so they suddenly realized that they really had a poet.
The edition Stará bydliště, Old Abodes, that came out in 1979, was little short of a bombshell. And it was followed by a samizdat edition in Czechoslovakia of Blatný's Asylum Verse, including several of the more eccentric multilingual poems. The collection acquired almost cult status among the young dissident generation. Blatný's own voice gives the poems a strange resonance.
The Count. The Count left the castle and went to the township bustle, tired of loneliness. Tired of deer park walking, he wants some more noise, more talking, tired of playing chess. And when he has enough of klaxons, of motor cars, of taxis, he's glad and turns round. Again the relaxation above the lower nation, lucky we have a count.
Professor Robert Prinsent from the University of London argues that the Asylum poems are Blatný's best work.
He has fused the naive, almost puerile, writing of the beginning of his career with the avant-garde to create a strange sort of patchwork that works. One can speak of a certain passivity in him before, in keeping to rhythm, letting the mechanics of poetry carry him along. So now his illness, one, combines the two previous periods of his writing, and two, he allows them to flow over him within a cultural context that's basic in his memory, and a cultural context which is the context of him in mental hospitals. Let those two contexts flow together in a new sort of verse, combining those two previous stages.
Then in 1989 came Czechoslovakia's Velvet Revolution. On his first visit to Britain as president in March 1990, just months after the fall of communism, Václav Havel, a long-time admirer of Blatný's poetry, went out of his way to meet Francis Mitchum.
Protože díky jí vlastně existuje celá veliká část díla Ivana Blatného je zachráněna a i když je to Angličanka, tak má o českou kulturu nesmírnou zásluhu.
President Havel was thanking her for what he described as her huge service to Czech literature. By this time, Ivan Blatný had been living at the Edensor home in Clacton-on-Sea for 5 years. He was too ill to come to London to meet Havel, but he did give Francis a message for the president, scribbled on a piece of cardboard, thanking him for his interest and stressing that he had no plans to return to Czechoslovakia. On the 5th of August, 1990, Ivan Blatný was taken ill, with serious respiratory problems.
They were getting Ivan ready to go into the ambulance, and I saw there the last piece that he was writing, which was quite unintelligible. And he said, Francis, come with me, come. I said, look, I can't, I've got my car stuck here. So he said, don't leave me. So I said, look, I will come very first thing in the morning. Anyway, they rang me that night and said he was much worse. So I said, well, would they get the priest? And before they could get him, he died.
Ivan Blatný's ashes were brought home to Brno. On the 2nd of May 1991, they were placed in the family grave in a ceremony attended by writers, relatives and politicians. Today, Francis Meacham is remembered virtually as a national hero, and Ivan is celebrated as one of Brno's great literary sons and as one of the great Czech poets of the 20th century.
Ivan is really a genius. One great genius from the whole family. And he was only poet. Nothing else. Nothing else.
This is one of the most beautiful spots in Prague, the Strahov Monastery. Looking out of the window here, I can see the cathedral, Prague Castle, and below, the river Vltava, on the other side of the river, the old town, and then the city spreading out beyond. And the building, the Strahov Monastery, going back to the 12th century that I'm standing in today, is the Czech National Literary Archive. It's, I suppose you could say, the literary pantheon of the Czech nation. And this is where all the poems, the exercise books that over many years in Britain, Ivan Blatný was filling with what many called his scribbles, have ended up. And I'm here with Martin Tharp, who can explain just how that happened.
When Blatný died in 1990, his papers were brought to Prague. Most of the corpus of his work, the large unpublished corpus, is here.
And we've just been told that there are no less than 25 boxes full of this material, aren't there?
Yes, 25 is a fairly large number. As far as I know, most writers have about 5 to 10 boxes in all.
But what now? They're sitting here, nobody ever looks at them. It would take a lifetime virtually to read through everything. What can happen next?
There was a suggestion a few years ago that all of it should just be scanned into a computer database or released on CD-ROM, which is an interesting idea. But at the same time, the one question I have is, how do you know where to begin and where to end? None of these books have any dates on them, and that any such project, just because it would have to have a beginning and an end, it would have to be linear, would be a kind of invention. It would be a kind of editorial intervention. And so maybe the only way is just to leave it as this mess of unrelated books and papers and just simply to look at it, open it up at random and read what's on that one page.
So let's do just that. And yes, here's something in English. Dennis Thatcher, my father, brings early tea. Margaret then gets up and makes breakfast for all Britain. Even for foreigners. A cizinec Josef Kunštát odchází pak z paní z nádvoří.